Mr. Gormley, Reel 4. We'll go back to the territorial unit, Mr. Gormley. The first camp that you went to, do you recall that?
Oh, yes. The first camp that I ever went to with the Devons was on Stockton Race Course. We always had this arrangement with the race course that they could use it when there was no racing in that hall. And we went down there and we had this weekend camp down there. So we marched from the drill hall down to Stockton. We made it a proper parade, like, you know. And we marched down there and then we went there, and of course everything was under canvas. You took your tents and everything was all taken down for you. The canvas was all put up. You didn't use any of the appurtenances belonging to the race course. You just use it, and you laid the proper camp out and everything, and then you did full weapon training there and everything, you know, and you're out marching every day. It was brilliant. I thought it was really great. Like, I'd never actually done anything like that before. I'd been camping before, naturally, but never actually with the army, you know, and it was a different kettle of fish altogether, you know, because all lads together, like, all enjoying themselves and everything. And that's what we did. We really enjoyed it.
And this was weekend, did you say?
Weekend, yeah. Like, there was no racing on that weekend. It would arrange to have the place made vacant for us, and we were going on a weekend camp there. That was like from Friday night to Sunday.
And you said that you did marching, so did you do any field craft, activities of that kind?
Yes. Well, you had to, you know. I mean,
what would that do? What were they teaching you then?
Well, I mean, it's basically, what can I say?
was it attacking a point? And defending and moving
out
this.
Well, yes, you know, they would set a point up out with the camp, and you would make an attack or a concealed attack or whatever, you know. There was always something. There was always somebody thinking of something, you know. But as regards that, like, it was amazing. How we used to fall into line with it, and you could enjoy it. You used to come away from there feeling absolutely great, you know.
Were you paid for those camps? Did they pay you?
Oh, no.
Not for the weekend?
Voluntary camp.
It was a voluntary one?
Voluntary camp, yeah.
Did people come along in quite good numbers when it was voluntary like that?
Oh, yes.
There was no problem getting them there?
A volunteer is worth 10 press men. Literally, any volunteer is worth 10 press men. Because you cannot rely on a press man. But if you've got a volunteer there, he'll be there, he'll stick it out with him, or whatever, you know.
What was the usual reason for people joining the Tories? Was it just the comradeship, or?
Well, I don't know.
It wasn't.
I can't think of any real thing that triggered me off to want to join, but I did. I just thought, I'll join the Tories.
It wasn't in the belief that you were going to make yourselves into soldiers and fight battles and that, was it?
No.
I don't even
thought about that, actually. I couldn't say it was a uniform, because definitely not. Definitely not a DLI uniform. That would be taking discretion beyond valour, that way, because you don't get expected back when you're dressed in the regular. You can't even tell the second time I'm the place, you know. Like we look like it anyway.
They hadn't measured you for the uniform.
No, it's just thrown at you like an That's it. There's your uniform.
But did they insist on a high standard of turnout in spite of that?
Oh yes. Irrespective of that, you were always smartly turned out, especially in the Denhams. Oh, I was very. PSIs and that, they were sticklers for that. Sticklers. And even in the regular army, they were sticklers. Because I know I was in contact with my lot out in the Middle East and the Far East, and that. And the big brothers were in there, and down from them. And they were real sticklers. They always were. And my uncle Alfie, he was ex-artist in the Downs from way back when. And he was really, what?
So you had a lot of, obviously, I think you said you kept your uniform at home, or you took it home with you.
Oh, yes.
And you kept it clean and polished and so forth.
Yeah.
Was it leather equipment or the usual khaki stuff?
Just the leather belt.
You said then that you went on an annual camp whilst you were with the unit.
Yes, yes. Well, that was towards the end. I'd done another couple of weekends with the terriers, and then we went on to, this would be about August time or September, June, July or August, somewhere about then, if I remember right. It was either July or I think it was July. And we went on a camp to Catholic camp. We were under canvas there. Everybody was under canvas there. And and we were out all day, every year. And the West, the East folks, I should say, the East folks were also in the same camp as us. There was a full brigade
camp.
There was a full brigade there, you know. And I always remember the East Yorks, they were alongside us in the camp. And the people who were looking after the camp were a bunch of, from the Crosbys, King's Own Scottish Borders. And I always remember this, and I don't know whether it was this that triggered me off to join the army, the regular army, or what. I always remember meeting this Crosby lad who was looking after the camp. He said, if you come down in the morning, if you time off, like it was a Sunday, like, he said, you've got the time off, he said, come down for me. He says, and I'll take you down and I'll show you all the silver we've got, for the regimental silver in the barracks where they were actually stationed, you know. So we went down on a Sunday morning to meet this other lad, and he took us in. I've never seen this much silver. It was a room bigger than this. It was absolutely full. It was magnificent. I couldn't even lift out of this room. You couldn't even lift something with that. And he said, go on, try and lift it. You couldn't lift it. It was actually solid silver. I think, looking back, that might have been the trigger that set me thinking about joining the regular army after, you know, coming back, like, you know, wondering whether I could get in among that. Like. I don't know.
So what activities were you doing at Catterick?
Pardon?
What activities were you doing at Catterick?
Oh, all day, every day. Approaching targets, shooting the targets. We used live ammunition as well. That was the first time we used live ammunition. And we were using the live ammunition on certain sections of the range which had been cleared, like, you know. And we were putting the attacks in, retreating. Anything, you know, all the things that you could possibly imagine doing in actual warfare, you know.
Was it infantry training based on the experiences of the First World War?
Yes, well, yeah. It had to be, because there was no other war, we hadn't had any other war since, so that's what it was actually based on what had happened during that First World War, you know.
Did you have any other supporting units with you, artillery or machine guns?
Yes, there would be artillery there, but I knew nothing about them. I mean, I'd heard my father talking about this.
But they weren't working with you when you went out?
I never actually saw them, because we were always, as normal, we were always in front. The artillery was behind, long-range snipers and corners. And we were always in front, as like infantry. We were spearhead. That's where that was our job. to spearhead the army, you know, and that's what he was meant to. I mean, he answered everything to the bugle. He didn't have a drum or anything like that, or any commands. Everything was all done by bugle call. Everything. And just the one that the bugle would sound, and that's it, that's the attack. But the bugle, that's retreat, retreat then, you know. So everything was done with the bugle.
Did the teacher dig trenches?
Oh, yes. Yes, he had to do with the dig the trenches, put all the revetments in and everything. So, oh, yeah, he dig away.
No, it's the
like
the Durham's had a reputation for digging good trenches.
Oh, I think they would, yeah. I think everybody in any of those battalions would know how to dig. Had to know how to dig. Like, you know, you dug your gardens, you always dug a garden with your father and alongside you, so I'd no trouble with digging, so like, you know.
For the fortnight of the camp, it would be full military discipline and training,
oh, yes,
wasn't it?
Oh, yes. There's no hesitation about that. Yes, there's... What's that again? Looking back in retrospect, I think I had a pretty good time. I had a really good time, you know. I look back on it with no regret at all, you know.
And this was a tented camp, was it? A tent camp, again?
Yes. In those days... You didn't have these big EPIP tents and that. You just had the old, what we call now a scout tent, where you all slept, feet to pool. Everybody's feet went into the pool, and you'd be about 18 in the tent, I suppose. All lying around the pool like that.
And what were you lying on? Was it boarded?
No, you had a palliasse. You just had a little palliasse near the store. When he went in, there was straw there. The first thing you did when you got there, you went into you went along this pile of straw, and you stuffed the bloody palliasse in the straw, and you stuffed it up with, and you made sure you got plenty in, because if you were left there, you got nothing. You were lying, and you just had a ground sheet underneath you, of course. Because you had to put your ground sheet.
Where was your equipment in this tightly packed tent? Huh? Where was your equipment in the tightly packed tent? Where did you keep your equipment?
With you. Alongside it.
And were you expected to keep it clean in spite of that? Yeah?
Oh, you have nowhere to put it. No, it had to be with you.
And the rifle? You'd have your rifle?
The rifle was there alongside it. You had your rifle alongside it. You never left it. That rifle never left your side. No, weren't allowed to leave loose of that. Even an officer couldn't take that off you. I've seen many an officer get a clout of trying to take a rifle of a fellow without asking permission to take it first. Well, I'm your brother, didn't I? Oh, aye.
So, if an officer tried to just take it without asking... Did you do usual army duties when in camp? Guard duties and picket duties?
Yes, sure. That was the first thing. That was the first thing you taught you, that. How to go on sentry go. Until you know how to do sentry go, you're not good as a soldier, were you?
What was the drill for sentry duty?
Yeah?
What was the drill?
The drill?
For sentry duty.
Sentry duty? Oh, well, you'd have, one, two, three, four, five. You'd have five men. Six men. And there would be a guard mount. And we'd have four men to do 2 hours each. And then you'd have one, what I call a stick man. Well, he was the stick man. He'd been picked out as the smartest road down the road. So he didn't have to stop in the garden. All he had to do was to bring your tea and stuff like that. That was because he was a stick man. he would bring all your tea along, or food and that, but it was me, you know. He was a fetching carry man. and the rest of them, you did your 2 hours on.
And you paraded and inspected before
you were fully inspected before you went on. And the sergeant would come round and inspect you. And then the officer, he would come round and inspect you.
The turnout would be very high, was it?
Well, as high as it could be expected, yes. But they're all found fault. Never a day went past that somebody would find fault with somebody somewhere. I think it was just a bit of bull at the time. To be sure, looking back, like there was just more or less the find fault with this one, fault with that one. You know, he's got something wrong with him. He's got something wrong. He's got something wrong. And, I mean, he made you lift your boots up to make sure we had every stud in your boot. Oh, yeah, there's that leg. I said, lift your boot up. You're missing a stud there. Put him on the charge. Put him on a bloody charge because there was a stud missing in your boot, but he might have lost it that day on the road, I suppose, you know.
Was there a guard tent?
As I say, the stick man, he went and did all the fetch and carry, like.
And what were you guarding? I mean, how was it, the entrance to the camp, or...?
It was just a guard, if you understand what I mean. It was just a means of saying there's a guard on. So, mainly, as you say, it would be at the entrance of the camp. And you would march up and down there. You would allow them about 30 paces each way, you know. And that was your stint. You went out there for 2 hours, up and down. You didn't go up and down all the time. You could stand at ease, you could do what you like. You know, once you put on guard duty, it was up to you from what you went. I mean, you just used to get sick of standing there, so you'd smoke arms and march up and down guard and travel, guard and out at all. You were just guard.
And were you expected to challenge people that came?
Oh, yes. 3 times. You must give 3 challenges.
And what was the challenge?
Yeah. How still going there?
And you did that 3 times if you didn't get an answer, first of all?
If you had a rifle. Oh, yeah. You're under orders to shoot them. And if you had ammunition with you, you'd do it at all. No hesitation.
What was the food like that they gave you on camp?
Always very good. I always found it very good. I never ever had any complaints.
What would you get?
Oh, mainly stew, which everybody would, because you knew you were always going to get a good help with stew, you know. It was everything for me. Just totally, and you always had a nice pudding or something like that, you know. Maybe. Like, this is as a camp, like, you know.
Yes, we're talking about the camp.
As a camp, like, the food was really good.
And breakfast, what would you get for breakfast?
Breakfast, oh yes, you'd have a bacon, eggs, stuff like that, you know.
So some people would be fed better there than they would be at home.
Oh, definitely, no doubt about it. I mean, I'd take my own, take my instance. I mean, there was 4 of us friends at home. We had nobody to look after us at the time. And I mean, my job was to scrub the stairs down every day, every week.
Yes, we've got that. And
things like that, you know. And it was only my father, you know. So we had to fend for ourselves, you know. Not that we starved or anything like that. But,
and was there a tea, an evening tea meal for you on the camp?
Oh, yes.
What might that be?
Generally, a few sandwiches. There would be a few sandwiches.
Was there a canteen in the camp that you could go to?
A
naffy?
Always a naffy. Naffy canteen, mate. Yeah. There's always a naffy canteen in the camp somewhere, which everybody used. Like, you know, they're all intermingled, like, you know. Grumpy, big tents and that, like.
What time did your day start?
6 o'clock.
And that was Bugle Reveille?
That was Reveille.
And with the bugle calls for every stage, you know, cookhouse and so forth.
Cookhouse, everything, especially in the dorms, everything was done by bugle. Nothing else. You never had a command at all. A bugle would sound and you know exactly what it was, and he'd tumbling off on the runway, you know.
And then the day would be made up, as you say, with training and being out in the fields and whatever. What time would the day finish, as a working day?
There was no finish as a working day. You finished when they finished, when they told you it would finish. You see, you could be out all day. You could be out all day and not all night.
You did night exercises.
Yes, you would do a night exercise. It would complete, just to carry on. they would bring you food to you. Then, when you were out at night and that, you know, and they would bring the food up to you where you were like enfilading some pre-doubt or something like that, you know, and night attacks and that. And, oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, brilliant, you know. I enjoyed every moment.
So, if you weren't on a night attack at some point during the early evening, you would be free to do whatever.
Yes, but most days, you would be back in camp about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock at the latest. Most days. But as I say, there were other days when you were carried on, maybe 10 o'clock at night.
Were you allowed to go into the village or the township?
Oh, yes. Nothing to stop you going in. Only the fella on guard do what you like. If you thought you weren't dressed properly, he'd send you back.
You had to be smartly dressed for that.
If you weren't dressed properly, you had to stand in front of the guard tent while I come out and inspect you. Oh, he'd send you back and he wouldn't tell you what was wrong with you. He'd say, go back and put yourself right and come back again. So you went away and he'd say, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's the matter with him? Then somebody would say, oh, well, maybe your button was undone or something like that. Like, oh, you've got a button undone, so you fasten the button up and you've gone back again. You'd pass you. The more of them, the better you say, oh, bugger, and I met them. Went down the canteen and had sucked up.
Have you any memories of actual incidents when you were in this camp?
Yes, quite a few different little things happened there, like, you know. It's just trying to bring it back into your mind, suddenly you want to do away, like, you know. Let me see. I mean, I've quoted that incident about the fellow with the silverware and that. And there was another... No, I can't.
Any accidents to people?
Oh, yes.
During the training?
Yeah, so there was generally accidents. Accidents did happen, and always will happen. When you're plodging about in the morass, I mean, Catholic, the moors are Catholic. They're very treacherous underfoot. People don't realise it, but very treacherous underfoot. And you'd be surprised how many people actually, like, twisted ankles and things like that. You know, you just couldn't avoid it. You'd be standing on you're standing on a slimy old rock or something like that, and you wouldn't realise if you stood on it that it was slimy. I remember falling on my bloody backside on one of them bits that I'm talking about, the slimy rock there. I thought I'd broken my back. I thought, oh God, I would lie there. I couldn't move.
Any accidents with weapons going off accidentally, this kind of thing?
No. At this time, when we were on the camp, the only time we used the live rounds was...
On the ranges, was it?
Within the range area, you know. That was the only time we used the live rounds.
Was there a lot of rivalry between the various units?
Well, there was between East Rock and all the other regiments. It's surprising. A lot of rivalry between all regiments, irrespective of who they are or what they are. And even between company and company. I think they used to whip it up on purpose. I'm sure they did. They whipped it up on purpose so that one was competing against the other all the time. A company. C company could be...
Had you to reach a certain standard of ability in camp? Did they measure you in any way, personally, to see how well you were doing?
Not really. Not that I can remember. I mean, you just went on and did what they were asked you to do. That was tap that hill or that hill or go down that valley or all that, you know. And you were just... sally on and do what you've been told to do because you didn't know any other
Presumably, you would on the rifle range, you would be expected to reach a standard.
Oh yes, well, yeah. Well, I mean, your rifle range, well, you have to be able to fire the gun for a start. That, I mean, that was your first thing that you were taught, how to fire the rifle, you see, and how to look back at your rifle. That was the basically first thing that any infantry man was ever taught, you know, because the rifle, without the rifle, you're no good. So that rifle had to be kept in spotless condition.
So you're constantly cleaning it?
Always.
What did you clean it with? How was it cleaned?
I got to call a pulser. And it was like a bit of a wax cloth. And you just put it on the end of a strip of wire. And you would pull it through from the beach, through the ground. That would clean every little vestige out of that bottle, you know.
And you drop of oil on it, was there?
Oh, yes, it's an oiled cloth, like an oiled cloth. You had what they call 42, you used to put a little drop of oil on, you know. Drop of oil on, that's all you do. And then you just pull it through like that, and it would clean everything out of the bottle.
And this would be inspected by the officer or NCO?
Well, this was before he went on parade, like on a guard mountain parade, you see. And that was the first thing. Porthouse for inspection, and he porthouse like that, and he'd open the vault, and he'd look down everybody, he'd look down every barrel. And God help you, there was a penny speck in there. straight away, no problem with that.
What ranges were you firing? What distances were you firing?
Well, we could fire up to about 1,000 yards.
That's a long way.
That's a long way, yeah, but if you had good eyesight, you could do it. But mainly, you were 800 yards. 800 yards was a maximum shot, actually. But you could fire up to 1,000. I mean, I had very good eyesight at the time, I must admit. And I could fire and hit the target 1,000 yards.
And was that the divide between carefully aimed shots and what they call rapid fire?
Oh, yeah, well, that was the aimed shot, you know, like, I mean, if you were shooting at 1,000 yards, you've got that pretty good eyesight to see it, you know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of books, I couldn't even read them 500 yards, I don't know what I told them. But, it's amazing, like, that. These things happen, you know, and of course you had to allow and forget about the hand grenades.
Yes, the hand grenade, never.
I nearly forgot about them, and just got in mind, we were taught how to throw the hand grenade, you know, the action, so that you could get the furthest throw, like, you know.
And was that the lobbing action rather than the throwing action?
Oh, yes. It's funny. You can lob it, try to even throw it. You try and throw it, but you can't. You lose the action when you get that the exact throw of that, and you can throw 20 yards further with a lobbing action just by lobbing it, rather than attempting to throw it, like, you know. Huh?
How did they teach you to throw it?
They taught you with a dummy one. You had a dummy one, which is exact weight. Exact weight, same weight as a grenade, and the toy, I think I could still do that action.
That was like the wheel action.
Yeah, it's just like a wheel. You just wheel and lock, and you let go at the highest point, you know. And you could get about 80 yards.
And did you get to throw live ones?
Oh yes. You were taught with the dummy ones. Oh yes, then of course you were on the ranges for this, like, you know, they wouldn't do it anywhere else.
But you'd have to have some protection, though. Where were you? Were you in a pit or something? Where were you actually? The point that you were at when you threw it?
They would teach you to throw it from up behind before you went in the trench.
Yeah.
Before you went in the trench, they taught you to throw it off the level ground, and then. As you got more and more proficient with the throwing, you know exactly. You could pin it down to, you know, a matter of about 20 yards. You could throw that still land somewhere within that 20-yard distance. No problem.